Give everybody a couple more minutes. Good to see you all this morning. Curious about what that
I know.
iPad is. Okay. Hey, John might know. John Russell.
You might.
Oh, John Russell's online, so.
Oh, not gonna be here today. So how was the lemon square that you had last night?
How was it? It was good.
Oh,
That's
I know your
one of
friend.
my favorites.
That's why I told we were gonna take it.
Okay, we're going to get started this morning. Welcome, everybody. Margo's getting ready to close the door. The upper room is open. We can never quite predict how many people we're going to have here in person. Anyway. I'm going to suggest take a moment to close your eyes. Get comfortable in your space. And simply allow yourself to be open. Open to whatever is speaking to you during this time. Getting a sense of our connection with one another, especially knowing that you are not alone. And as you do that, you know that we share our hearts and our minds and our souls and our spirits to many, 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 many other people here on planet Earth who are seeking the same goals we are. And we might even extend that to beings in other planets, other galaxies, other dimensions. The universe we live in is so much more complex and large than we could possibly imagine. And that every forward step we take, we also take for one another. A prayer I use quite often goes like this: I am whole, I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall go from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. Last week, as part of our reflection, I sent along because a piece of my sermon last Sunday. And it's kind of fascinating because it fits in exactly with what our reading is this morning. And that was not a conscious, not a conscious intention on my part, but there it is. I'm going to begin on page 331. And of course, you're always welcome to chime in if you have a question or a comment. And I guess I'll stop right on the top of the page of 331. Why you feel so odd is that leaving the old self in many ways feels like a passing, and a passing of the old self may call with it the emotions that are attended to with any passing. In fact, what you are doing at a frequency level is choosing to become your true self. There's a grieving of kind of, and we're not actually leaving our old self behind. We are leaving our attachment to our old self behind. We're letting go of who we thought we were and allowing ourselves to be open to the possibility and the energy of who we truly are. Margot explained it to me one time by saying, oh, I know what's going on. You're going through awkward. You're trying something, it's like putting on a new pair of shoes. I'm putting on a new identity. Actually, I'm claiming my true identity. And it feels a little bit weird because we're just getting used to that. I am getting used to being my divine self. See, you say that out loud and my mind can't really comprehend what that means. It's too big. But your heart knows what that means because you've already lived in a state of compassion. You already know what that means. You already know what that's like. I was going to say you know what that feels like, but it's not an emotion so much as it is an awareness. In fact, what you are doing at a frequency level is choosing to become your true self, vibrating at the frequency or the vibrational level of unconditional love. We are aware of that. We do that sometimes consciously. We do that other times unconsciously. What would be really interesting is, I wonder how long we can spend in that particular realm of understanding consciously. Deliberately to be awake. Now the ego thinks that that's a terrible amount of work. Oh my God, I couldn't possibly do. It's just too hard to do that. Whereas the essence of it, my spirit says, it's not difficult at all. You're just letting your light shine. There's no difficulty at all in letting your light shine if you choose to. It's just that we forget. Couldn't have a V8. Forgot who I was. We warned you at the top of the text, this would not be comfortable to the ego or the personality, and it has not been. When your ego and your personality thinks it's a definition of who you are, it does not want to be dethroned. And so the struggle it puts up is quite natural. And we just need to recognize that as being a natural result of switching gears, switching identities between my small self and my higher consciousness. For most people, there are two kinds of awakening. Probably there's more than two, but two general kinds of awakening. One is what I call the St. Paul wrote the Damascus awakening. That is just so sudden and so shocking. It all pushes you into a different state of consciousness. It's just like, bam, it happens. Bill Wilson, one of the co-founders of AA, had an experience like that. When he was hitting a really, probably the most desperate patch in his life, he said something to the effect, if there is a God, let him show himself. Now, this doesn't work for everybody. It worked for him because God did. He said, the room lit up. He was, I was surrounded by light. I don't think he used the word grace, but he was referring to that. I was surrounded by grace. I was surrounded by light. And he said to himself, ah, this is the God the preachers must be talking about. That was the only language he had for that. Paul on the road to Damascus, probably any number of other people who have had experience, sort of drastic experiences that have changed their whole perspective. There's a book called A Variety of Religious Experience, which describes that kind of awakening, but says that most people have spiritual awakenings of what he called the education, William James called of the educational variety. And he didn't mean intellectual. What he meant was most of us sort of have awakenings that are gradual awakenings. They're not these one big sudden things. Little things come along and go, ah, that remind me who I am. And then I forget for a while. And then something else happens and I remember a while. So most of us are going to be experiencing that kind of educational variety or gradual awakening rather than something that's sudden. It seems like it would be nice to have that sudden kind of awakening and then all your work is done for you. But it isn't. There's still work involved. All you have to do is read the epistles of Paul and notice that even though he had a drastic awakening, he was still struggling with most of his humanity. Not a bad thing, just the way it was. We warned you at the top of this text, this would not be comfortable to the ego or the personality, and it has not been. And if you look at what you have had to encounter since the dictation began, you'll understand more clearly that these things were called to you to be realized through. In other words, the stuff that comes up are things that we're being asked to learn from. They're not problems. How did somebody put it? The stuff that's in your way is your way. It's not a mistake. It's not a hardship. You didn't do anything wrong. When you pray to be in the light, what happens is all the things that are keeping you from the light come back up in your face in order to be healed or let go of or transform. Nothing bad about that. That's just the way it happens. So you are not grieving, Paul, although that is what it sounded like as we spoke the words to you now. You are acknowledging that the book that you were reading, the life that you have lived and perceived yourself through, has been ended, and a new life is waiting to resume. I have a little bit of a problem with that one. I do think there's some grieving involved. That's just my opinion. Not grieving in the sense of loss, but grieving in the sense of change. Anytime we change something, anytime we shift gears, anytime we let go of something, even though we want to let go of it, there is a grieving process. So that let's just take, for example, I talk a lot about some of my own addictions. Letting go of some of those addictions as much as I wanted to let go of them, as much as I needed to let go of them, I still grieved letting go of them because they were part of my life for such a long period of time. And so there is a sense of loss, there is a sense of grieving, but it's not a sense of I want that back, but something's different, something's missing, something's not there the way it was before. And that obviously is always going to cause a little bit of grief on our part. Grief in the sense of letting go and grief in the sense of healing. A new life, you see, for each of you is what you must welcome at the top of the mountain. And a new life, we say, may resemble the old life in many ways. But the woman you are now, the man that you are now, who knows himself in this new way, will be seen in a freedom that he has not known. A freedom that he has not known. One of the promises in 12-step recovery says, you will know a new freedom and a new happiness. And I often wrestled with that one for a while. What I discovered was that it wasn't a repeat. It wasn't going back to my old idea of what freedom was about. It wasn't going back to my old idea of what happiness was about. It was being open to a very new perspective of what freedom and what happiness is all about. And that is something that continues. My awareness of that is a continual growth process. So it is for you, probably.
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, Jim.
And what you just said, that I suspect that part right there in terms of that new freedom and new happiness, that can be quite a leap for some because I have no idea what that's going to look like or feel like.
Definitely. The old definition of happiness is getting what I want. A newer definition of happiness is being grateful for what I have. Nothing's changed except my perception of things, but it makes a whole difference in the world that I'm living in. Freedom. Freedom means doing anything I want to do in my old perspective. Freedom in a new perspective is following the dictates of my heart, where there is no conflict, where there is no judgment, where there's just openness.
Jerry.
And becoming. Yeah, Paul.
Yeah, it's also kind of similar to, you know, the scenario when people's children grow up and they're going off to school, and you know, so many, especially women, have trouble with that transition, hold on to almost grieving it, because now they are have to step, they're stepping into a new world, a new consciousness. Those are no longer children under the roof of the household or their jurisdiction.
Of course, they have to be aware of that, don't they, Paul?
Well, they are aware of it, but you know, that I guess it's that just the grief of that passing, I guess, and not being
sure.
In that place again.
What I'm suggesting with that question is that some people might refuse to change.
Yeah.
In other words, even though the kids are gone, I might still be in my mind or in my awareness, limited awareness, I'm still holding on to them as being little kids. Still being a mom and dad to a 6-year-old rather than a 50-year-old.
Then I would think depression would be starting in.
I'm just suggesting that what you're saying is absolutely true. However, there are some people who will refuse to accept that kind of change in their lives.
Oh, yes.
And of course, that's pretty painful.
Is it grieving or is it an attachment?
What was that, Jim?
Is it grieving or is it an attachment?
Perhaps that's what the book is getting at letting go of an attachment rather than grieving. However,
well, that's good. Yeah.
I can just speak on my own self here, that even when I'm letting go of an attachment, even though I'm letting go of something that might be harmful to me, there's still a sense of grieving involved. I'm missing something. I wouldn't say it's hurtful necessarily, but it's certainly uncomfortable. Now, the other side of that is when I grieve, when I let go of something, I need to put something in its place. That's my divine consciousness coming in. Do you remember that? It was a little parable that Jesus gave that was always a little bit puzzling to me because it seemed like it came out of nowhere. But what he said was, he said, I'd like you to imagine, I'm paraphrasing here, I'd like you to imagine someone who had seven demons cast out of him. Demons meaning addictions, attachments, whatever word you want to put in there. And that was all very nice. But the person didn't do anything. It was kind of like opening all the windows to your house and sweeping the floor clean and not doing anything after that. They said what happened was because he didn't do anything with the empty space that he's got, is seven more moved in worse than the first seven. I think there's a little bit of Eastern humor in that particular parable, right? What they're saying is, it's fine to be able to let go of something, grieve it, or letting go of an addiction or an attachment, but make sure that you fill up, you don't go around with this Swiss cheese-like mindset of filling up all those holes in you, and they are intentionally filled with light, or grace, or peace, or harmony, or whatever you want to do. But that's your choice. Your choice is letting go, but your choice is also what you're filling up with. I mean, I found a lot of people did this especially when I was working in treatment. They would quite often substitute one addiction or one attachment to another. One of the worst things that could happen is somebody falling in love with somebody else in treatment and think, yeah, well, now I'm cured. Everything else is, I met the love of my life. Everything's fine. Little did they know that they were filling up the gap in their lives with an unhealthy relationship, with an image of what they thought a relationship was supposed to be about, which never lasted. Unfortunately,
Jerry, you just spoke to that old song that comes to my mind. I was thinking about looking for love in all the wrong places.
You got it. You got it, Jim. And not knowing it. A new life for each of you is what you must welcome at the top of the mountain. And a new life, we say, may resemble the old life in many ways. Especially the externals. Doesn't mean you have to change everything. I remember Ram Dass one time was talking about going back to Harvard and meeting some of his old cronies there. And he remembered one particular professor who they were sitting down talking to one another for about 10 or 15 minutes. And of course, this is after he had made his trip to India, met his guru, went through all sorts of huge changes in his life. And this guy, kind of puffing on his pipe, pulled the pipe out of his mouth and said, Dick, you know, you haven't changed a bit. Because he was looking at, you know, I'm looking at you the way I used to look at you, and that's the only way I can see you. Now, that'd be really interesting if we could turn that flashlight on ourselves. Am I looking at myself the same way I did last week or yesterday? Or when I look in a mirror, I can see my human self in a mirror. Can I see my divine self in the mirror? The woman you are now, the man that you are now, knows himself in this new way, will be seen in a freedom that he has not known. The teaching of freedom, which will come in time, is an important teaching because mankind believes herself to be enslaved, and in fact, she is not. And by enslaved, we mean in agreement to stay small. All you got to do is look around. All you got to do is flip on the news and get a sense of the energy of staying small. And where for some people it seems to be power and control. Power and control do not exist in the upper room. Not the power to control. There is no force, get this, with all the crap that's going on in the world right now, and all of the stuff that might be terribly disturbing, there is no force stronger than the Creator.
I try to keep holding on to that fact consciously through the day. There is no other power stronger than the
I agree
Creator.
Again, Paul. There is no force stronger than the Creator. And as you become self-identified through the true self, there is nothing that you could contend with that could keep you in bondage. The way Paul put it one time was, there is absolutely nothing that can separate you from God's love. And he goes through a whole list of all kinds of things. Can this do it? Can this do it? Can this do it? Can this? He said, no, say nothing. Nothing can separate you from God's love. Nothing can separate you, excuse me, nothing can separate you from the power, the creative power that is part of your divine self.
Hey, Jerry.
Yes, Jim.
What Paula said, I echo that, because what goes through my, and this may be a part, this may be something from a Course in Miracles, nothing and no one has any power over me except that which I have given it. And that's an awareness on my part to recognize that. And then the other thing kind of speaks to what you said, and it kind of, it's kind of whimsical, funny, but I'll say to myself, God doesn't unfriend me, nor does God block me.
You notice what's happening here, Lou. What's happening with me as we're talking about this is, on one side, there is fear and all sorts of things that can feed my fear. On the other side is the creative power of love, or God, or whatever you want to call it. Which side do I choose? It's really interesting because my ego and my personality think that love and peace and joy, they're kind of wimpy. But war and hatred and fear and blood and gore and guts, that's got power. And until we are able to shift that consciousness of giving power to those negative things that we think somehow have control over us, to that other side of the power of love, the power of grace, the power of healing, right? We're going to keep living in a world of duality. I don't like that particularly, but that's true. There is no force stronger than the Creator. And as you become self-identified, in other words, you're going to have to work on this one. As you become self-identified with the true self, who you really are, there is nothing that you could contend with that could keep you in bondage. Nothing, absolutely nothing. The bondage that you perceive yourself to be in, enslavement to a job, enslavement to a hierarchy, enslavement to a government, enslavement to new policies that are coming into play, enslavement to a hierarchy that tells you you are allowed and what you are not. will be attended to when these teachings continue. The bondage that you perceive yourself to be in, enslavement to a job, enslavement to whatever, that tells you what you are allowed and what you are not, will be attended to as these teachings continue. In other words, it's already here. And if you allow yourself to continue to open that truth, it will become more and more part of who you truly are. Many of you live a life of comfort. Me too. You may lounge on your chair. You may read this text. You may go, yes, I see. I can do this work. Maybe tomorrow. It'd be like going to a conference on homelessness, you know, and really digging your teeth into the stuff of being a problem and being a real difficulty and such, something that really needs to change. And then the bell rings at 5 o'clock and the workshop's over. Say, what's for dinner? See how quickly we can move from one thing to another? Here I spent maybe 4 or 5 hours talking about the problem of homelessness and really working on that, really delving into it and being as probably as compassionate as I possibly can be. And then, oh, workshop's over. Let's get a pizza. I'm just as guilty of that as everybody else is, okay? And I'm not saying, well, we need to carry this pain with us, you know, for the rest of our lifetime. No. What heals the world, what heals myself, is my ability to be compassionate, including to myself. Not negativity so much. I do want to get dinner for myself, but I don't want to forget those who don't have dinner. That's not a judgment,
Jerry,
but an awareness. Yeah, Paul.
I want to share the ending of a Mary Oliver poem that kind of sums up what you're talking about here. The end, the title of the thing is I Worry, but then the end of it is, she said, blessed it is to be here. We're late at night in our home, which has hot water and a roof and an ice maker and two ice makers and a carport with a car. No, two cars with four tires each. Blessed it is to be here where I can sit and worry in peace. I think that is just great.
That is great. That is great. You're going to have to send that along, Paula.
Yeah, I'll get the whole, because the whole poem is very, very profound.
That's terrific. I love it. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
Hey, Jerry.
Yes, Jim.
So just kind of going back to what you said regarding the maybe going to a conference on folks who are in transition or you had issues where it's homelessness. A follow-up question, at least for me, had been, okay, now what is mine to do? Now I say that, and I'm not saying this to, you know, pat myself on the back or anything like that, but for the past maybe 2 years, maybe longer than that actually, since I've been in Louisville, is, you know, I'm at Wayside about three days a week serving meals to folks who are in transition. Mm-hmm. A couple of days ago when I was leaving, going to my car after lunch was over, I just kind of looked up and I said to myself, if not by the grace of God, there go I. And then I said to myself, there are no others. There's no others or no enemies. Those folks, and there aren't just folks, they're just another part of me. And as I got into my car, I was grateful to be able to give a part of myself to the folks there.
Yeah. Thank you for that, Jim. Another very quick Ram Dass story that I hope is appropriate. In the 70s and 80s, during the AIDS epidemic, he was working with people who were dying. And he said, you know, I would become so enamored of these people that I was working with, that I would connect to them soul to soul. I would also know that I was going to be losing them maybe in a couple of days. He said, but you know what I discovered was when I was living on the edge of love and heartbreak was when I was most alive. I went, wow. When I was living on the edge of love and heartbreak, I was most alive. I'm not necessarily recommending that to anybody, but I'm just suggesting what he discovered was, and what all of us discover sometimes, is that this is not something that can be completely understood by the thinking mind. There's a lot of paradoxes in the spiritual life and spiritual growth, and a lot of things that don't necessarily compute. But primary of what they believe they're talking about here is recognizing your true identity. And even though we might forget sometimes, to give ourselves the openness and the ability to remember lovingly again and again and again. Many of you live a life of comfort. You may lounge in your chair. You may read this text. You may go, yes, I see, I can do this work. There are millions on this plane who will never read this text. They may toil in the fields. They may suffer from lack of food. Their requirements for the day's work are to make it through to the next. When one man comes forward in freedom, what he does is unchain the one next to him, and it will go on this way for a good time. Say that again. When one man comes forward in freedom, and what he does is unchain the one next to him, it will go on this way for a good time. The crucibles you face of indecision and fear, and the choice to relinquish power to systems that could control you, will have to be addressed by you as you progress in light, because those systems of control cannot support the degree of frequency you now hold. In other words, the balloon is not going to get off the ground unless you cut loose some of the sandbags. And you can want to cut the sandbags, but unless you do cut them, actually, right, the balloon is going to stay on the ground. I'm not making a judgment about you. We're just kind of a law of metaphysical nature. If you can imagine that you are piercing your head through a cloud to the high vibration and perceiving truth at that level, and then you look back down at all the creations that you have all agreed upon in low nature, you will feel compelled to act. The worker in the field may be learning what she needs to learn, but what she needs to know most is that the creator within her can free her from whatever bondage she has known herself through. The holding of the vibration that you now have as you is, in fact, catalytic to others, and the light that you are can shine in the darkest places and bring what is needed to transform. That's our job.
Great.
You
Jerry.
might be the only light that some people see today. But you've got to be conscious of that. I am willing to be the light. I am willing to be the truth of who I am. Even though I struggle with that, I am willing to be the truth of who I am. Yeah, Paul?
That whole page 332 in that last paragraph you read are like exactly what we are, the thing we're going through right now.
What
All
struck you most?
the, well, to begin with, up in the part of the bondage that you perceive yourself to be in, enslavement to a job, enslavement to hierarchy, that tells you what you are allowed and what you are not will be attended to be a teaching. The political arena, how we're getting, I don't know, the whole political arena I'm hearing about, I can see us, a part of us becoming enslaved to all these things. And in turn, keeping the bondage going.
Mm-hmm.
It just, the whole page to me was extremely apropos for right now.
Mm-hmm. And I would suggest that the bondage they are talking about is the bondage of fear.
Yes.
Yeah, Linda?
I probably can't state this as I feel it, but going to back what this page says about individuals having the light and breaking the chain and one more and one more and one more. Come along. And it seems, I'm sorry, probably can't get through this. It seems as if we have done that in this country in so many ways. In the last week or so, the one thing that's kind of stuck in my craw is all these companies and universities and so on are dismantling their DEI programs and just so many things that I think we accomplished. And then I see it as the dark light coming along and just trying to wipe
mm-hmm.
all that out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so discouraging to me.
No, I totally agree. And that's part of our trip. This was years ago on 60 Minutes. And I forget who the interviewer was, but he was interviewing a young man in his 30s, I guess he was 30s or 40s, who had set up this summer camp for Palestinian and Jewish kids. And it was just an absolutely marvelous story. Heartrending. Of how these kids just began to see one another as human beings, not as the enemy. And then at the end of the story, the announcer said, yeah, but what do you think is going to happen a couple of years from now with those kids? And you could almost see this guy, it was like sticking a pin in him, becoming deflated. And the words that he spoke was, yes, you're probably right. Violence and fear will probably out-trump love and compassion any time of the year. And he gave in to that negativity. I don't know what happened afterwards. But the heartbreaking aspect of it was, it was a beautiful, beautiful story and a beautiful man who went through this whole process. And now, and then he allowed it to be shot down. He could have said, no, the reason why I'm doing this is I believe in these kids. And maybe some of them are going to go the way their old man, their father went, but some of them are not. Some of them are still going to hold on to the memory and the idea of this, of these are my brothers and my sisters. We didn't do them. That's my challenge. That to see the people, even the ones I fiercely disagree with, the ones whose personality and ego I can't stand, to recognize, as we talked about last week, of, you know, am I getting so caught up in the mask that they're wearing that I forget who they truly are? Do I do that one myself? This is God in disguise. This is a divine child of God who does not remember who he or she is. This is the embodiment, as much as it doesn't appear to be. This is the embodiment of unconditional love. Can I see it that way? And until I can, and I'm not denying the struggle is, because I struggle with this every day. Until I can see through the mask, see through the disguise, I'm not gonna, I will not be at peace. And certainly neither will you. But that one liner of kind of Ram Dass speaking of we're all walking one another home. Right? You are the light.
Jerry.
Hang on a second.
Mm-hmm.
When one man comes forward in freedom, what he does is unchain the one next to him, and it will go on this way for a good time. Gandhi, Martin Luther King, Mother Teresa, Thomas Merton. It'll one step leading another. People who refused, I refuse to get lost in negativity. I refuse to look at negativity and hatred as being the truth. I don't care what it looks like. The movement of freedom that started with little Rosa Parks sitting in the front of a bus. Who would have thought that could have led to the Million Man March in the Capitol a couple of years ago? And obviously, there's still a heck of a lot of work to be done in that particular, in many areas. Who would have thought that one little person doing seemingly one little thing could essentially change the world? Yes.
Okay, so I was struck on the top of page 333, the last couple of sentences talk about transforming and transformation. And I had the privilege to be on a transformation team a number of years ago.
Oh,
We were
geez.
working with an organization that was very hierarchical, and we wanted them to move into teams. This was before team was a big deal in the business world. And what we learned was that it was not enough to share an idea with them. We had to give them an experience of it. And if we gave them that experience, then they could, now they could begin to go, oh, I like this. I can do this. I can do this. Can we change it a little bit, like to do this? And so I, one of my favorite experiences was after one of these workshops. When people came into the workshop, we told them, on your name tag, just have your first name. No titles, no last names. We don't want to know any of that stuff. And we would put them through a couple of days of transformation work. And on the last, in the last hour of one of these, this, we went around the room and asked everyone, what did you think about this experience? And this vice president, now I said, now you can introduce who you are and what your title is. And this vice president says, oh man, I have learned so much. I can't wait to go back and apply some of this stuff, transform my department. And he said, the other thing I learned is we've got people with so many ideas in this company. This person here, he pointed to the person right next to him. He says, this, I think this is now my best friend. And we've learned so much together. And he says, by the way, what do you do? And the guy says, well, sir, I work in the mailroom. And the whole point being that we had transformed everyone's concept of what was possible. And they had lived part of it. And I think sometimes we get hung up in the words without having a vision, without having an experience. Lately, I've been blessed because I've been able to coach a number of people. And I used to coach by telling them what to do. Now I coach by asking them questions that allow them to come up with the ideas and figure out how they could do it. And what I love is, I feel so connected to them, and I feel so identified with their success, their transformation, but they're doing it. It's theirs, and I get to help. I don't know if that's relevant, but thank you.
Thank you, John. I'm hoping that this Sunday morning gathering for each one of us is an experience like that. Beyond thought, beyond my feelings. Not to deny those, but to say also that the world that I live in, the world that I'm creating right now, goes beyond that level of feeling or that level of negativity or that energy that might be weighing me down. So we're going to take a minute to meditate. You can put your stuff down. Close your eyes if you like. Take a couple of breaths. If there's any knots inside you, just breathe into them. Let them kind of relax, unfold. And recognize it's not perfect yet. Sometimes it doesn't even seem to be close. But we all know this on a conscious level or an unconscious level, that the light has never gone out. And it never will. Light is always more powerful than darkness. Love is always more powerful than fear. And breathe into that knowing. And we'll end with that prayer that we began with this morning. And you can repeat these words to yourself. I am whole. I am filled with light. I am perfect. I am filled with light. I am surrounded by the pure white light of Christ. Nothing but good shall come to me. Nothing but good shall go from me. I give thanks. I give thanks. I give thanks. When your heart is open, you touch everyone and everything with love and compassion. And you have no idea of the many beings that you have lifted out of fear and depression simply by your smile. You are the light. You are the light. You are the light. Deep breath. Stretch a bit. Can open your eyes when you're ready. Thank you all. I hope you have a good week. You're in my
Thank you,
love,
Jerry.
In my prayers.
Thank you for blessing me.
Thanks,
love
I
you.
Feel
That was great. Thank you.
Thank you,
Jerry.
Jerry.